if you'll think about where we've been with David, open up to 1 Samuel 25. That's our today. And it's another one of these just, I mean, am I allowed to say strange stories from the Old Testament? Just it's so even difficult to see what's even going on. A lot of our task today is going to say, what's actually happening in this story? And then we'll have to say, how did David grow from this? And then we'll have to look and go, how do we grow from this too? And it really is, David is learning in lots of different situations, lots of different strange names, strange Old Testament Bible character names kind of come and go through the story. But I wonder if you start noticing that David is really learning the same lesson over and over and over. And maybe there's utility in that for us, where we could look in the mirror and go, okay, Grant, you have one lesson to learn, and God is going to use lots of different kinds of experiences, lots of different kinds of situations in our lives. But really, at the end of the day, there is one lesson for the follower of God to learn, and that is to follow God. It is to learn to trust Him in every single situation, to no longer look at the world like, what do I do in this situation? What do I do here? And what do I do here? And what do I do here? But where our life is simplified to the point where we say, every situation, every up and every down, and every stage of life, the thing I am most about is simply learning to trust God, learning to follow God. So the truth is, as David learns to lead, and again, we talk about this a lot as we're looking at David's leadership, really, leaders are not supposed to be those that have extra special qualities. Rather, leaders are supposed to be those who have grown down the path of maturity in the Lord that we all aspire to be. We should not look at leaders and go, wow, I'm glad they're there. We should look at leaders and go, hey, I'd like to be more like them. So even as we see David learn to lead, what we're seeing is the kind of the growth path that we all should be on. And so godly leaders or godly people are not the ones that have like acquired the skill set. You'll notice how little the Bible says about David learning to be a warrior or David learning to be a king. I guess he learned that stuff, and certainly all those years out on the battlefield leading people and being in Saul's court, but we just don't have those stories of like, here's what David learned about civil leadership. There were other ways that he learned that stuff. What we learn over and over, the stories that get told over and over are how in the middle of that, David learned to, as well as be a good civil leader, to trust God. So, godly leaders. The thing we're all aspiring to be is not just someone who has acquired a certain skill set, but rather to be people who are fully submitted to the Lord, fully trusting Him. In fact, we would probably say that people who have acquired the skill set necessary for great leadership and have not learned to follow the Lord, to submit themselves to the Lord, those are the scariest people on the planet. Those are the ones we worry about the most. So David has learned the same lesson. David, just trust God. He's learned it in Saul's court. He learned it out in Nob with the priests. He learned it as he fled to Gath, where Goliath was from. He learned it in caves, and he learned it on battlefields. And today we're going to see him learn the same lesson in yet a new situation. And, you know, I wonder if that's even thing we get from this, is here's how you trust God when you're fearful. Here's how you trust God in good times. Here's how you trust God when you've been betrayed. And today we're going to see how David needs to learn to trust God, really as he is profoundly insulted, as his honor, as he is disrespected. And while this story seems very ancient, the feeling of having my pride dinged, the feeling of having my honor offended, being disrespected, that's something we all relate to. And it was something that David needed to learn. So if you'll look in chapter 24 and verse 20, and then read through chapter 25, verse 1, you'll see that this is a time of transition in Israel. You remember last week we read the story of David sparing Saul's life. And starting there in verse 20 of chapter 24, you see Saul for the first time really acknowledge what God is doing. He says, no, I see now that you will be king. It's not going to be my son Jonathan. It's not going to be any of my other sons. David, you're the one who's going to be king. And not only that, but the kingdom of Israel will be established through you. Now, this is the first time that Saul has like out loud acknowledged what everybody else already knows. And that is that David is going to be the one who really gets the federal government of Israel moving in the right direction. It's going to be through him that Israel is established. Then if you'll start in verse, well, I'll grab my Bible here, so I'll read along with you. Start in chapter 25, and that first, in probably most of your Bibles, that first verse is kind of sectioned out kind of by itself. And some people have even said it's kind of an aside, you just need to know this. Now, I think rather this is the section heading for the whole last, you know, several chapters of 1 Samuel. Because if we are reading this and reading this as Hebrew people seeing our history, saying, how did God establish us as a nation? This would have been a profound transitionary truth. Verse 1 says, now Samuel died. Do you remember who Samuel is? 1 Samuel starts with the birth of little Samuel. And Samuel is raised by Eli, the priest. And Eli is not a great mentor and even a worse father. And so the priesthood dies with his generation. And just Samuel is left. And really, over the course of this kind of transitionary period in all of Israel, Samuel has functioned as the most important, religious is not the right word, but the most important religious figure in the nation. He has been the prophet, the one who speaks the words of God. He has been the priest, the one who does the sacrificing. And he has really been, he's been the one who anointed Saul and then anointed David. It really has been Samuel that has been the rudder that has kept the nation. If they are faithful, it has been Samuel that's kept the nation faithful to Yahweh. And now David is not yet king and Samuel dies. Now Samuel died and all of Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him in his house at Ramah. Many commentators have made the point that being buried at his house would make it where he would not be venerated, like he wasn't laid in state or given a state funeral. Rather, it was a simple burial at his house. But this is definitely a transition mark in Israel. And, you know, for our man David, it's quite a transition, too. It's the time when he looks around and says, oh, I don't have Samuel to run to. I don't have a mentor anymore. It's a transition for Israel because Samuel has functioned as this great religious leader. But for David, he is much more on his own than he's ever been before. What will happen to him without Samuel? Where will he go when he needs to confess, when he needs to run from Saul? There's another priest, a guy named Abiathar, but Abiathar kind of works for David. He's in David's court. David will call him and say, hey, bring the ephod. We need to pray to God. But that wasn't like Samuel. David didn't beckon Samuel. David had Samuel as a mentor, a real father in the faith, you might say. And so this is the first story. And I don't know if this if you relate to this, the first time you're kind of on your own. You know, the first time maybe is like a married people. You sign that agreement. Yes, we will pay rent. And you go, holy smoke, what did I just sign? Right? It's all on me now. And this is the place where David finds himself. So in some week's story reminds us of last week's story. If you'll remember, Saul was this mortal enemy of David who wanted to kill him and David's life, and yet cut the hem of his robe off and had that authority, that power, and repented. And it was the story of David wrestling with, how do I deal with this one who would try to seek my... In Saul's place today is a guy called Nabal. And Nabal, how do I say this, is a big fat jerk. And I don't know if this is meaningful to you, but as I've been thinking about this week, I have never really dealt with mortal enemies. I have never thought, oh God, This person is seeking my life. But I have dealt with big fat jerks all over the place, and so have you. Even some people who are not always big fat jerks, but just said a big fat jerky thing to me. And we get to see how David not just handles the fear and the problem of mortal attack, but the problem of insult, the problem of disrespect, which, let me tell you, handling disrespect, an attack against our honor as a person, is one of the biggest differences between a Christian and somebody who doesn't honor Christ. So our story, let's pick it up in verse 3, and we'll meet two people. We'll meet Nabal, and we'll meet his wife, Abigail. And if Abigail is not your hero by the end of this story, then you need to read it again, because Abigail is the wisest person in the book of Samuel, not named Samuel. So starting in verse 3. Now, the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife, Abigail. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. He was a Calebite. And David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep. So here's the setting. Nabal is a rich guy with a bunch of sheep. And it is a dangerous thing to be a rich guy with a bunch of sheep in ancient Palestine. Your sheep and your herdsmen are out there in the fields and really unprotected. The shepherds are paying attention to trying to keep the sheep safe and get them to pasture land where they can be nourished. And there are bands of raiders all over the place that are stealing sheep, that are beating up shepherds. It is a very much like old kind of dangerous occupation to be one of these shepherds. We have a vision of a little shepherd boy playing a harp while the sheep graze and all. That is maybe not the right vision of a shepherd. Shepherds had to be tough, and shepherds were in danger a lot. There are no old men shepherds. There are a euphemism for shepherd in the Old Testament is your young men. It is something you do from age 15 to 25 when you feel like getting in a fight a lot. And so Nabal has this, like, and also see wandering out there are not just his sheep, but his bank account. This is how wealth is counted. It's just pure. This is his business, his livelihood, his bank account, his esteem among the people. Having great wealth was the same thing as having a lot of herds. So they were out there in the fields and they happen upon David. This is like the context. We don't see the months leading up to this story, but somehow they had hooked up with David, and David and his, apparently the troop has grown to 600 men. His 600 men are protecting Nabal's sheep, and Nabal's sheep and shepherds are out there in the field. And David is out there with his men being a mercenary army. If you read this the first time, it really seems like David is running some kind of mob style protection scheme. You got to know a little bit about the culture to know that that's not exactly what's happening, but it feels like that. David is out there in the field protecting Nabal's sheep, his interests, his name. He is making Nabal look good, look strong. But Nabal, what do we hear about him? Nabal was a harsh man who behaved badly. I don't think I have to preach that. You know what harsh people who behave badly are like. This is Nabal. And Nabal is married to this wonderful woman named Abigail. So as the story goes, we find out that David and his men have been protecting Nabal's herds. And then in verse 4, David hears that Nabal is shearing his sheep. Now, I wonder if you could, again, put yourself in a place where your sheep are your wealth. The richest people you know are just the people who have the most sheep. Well, how do you make a living off of sheep? You do eat sheep, but it's not like cattle. No, rather, shearing season for a shepherd is like harvest season for a farmer. You with me? So shearing season, if you could imagine like harvest festivals in towns that or in areas that are agricultural. So harvest season, we would all get together and share the bounty of the harvest. And there's the state fair. Look, I grew the biggest zucchini. And, you know, like it's a party time. It is a time of celebration in a culture. Well, in a place that that raises sheep, that's what shearing season is. So David hears that it's party time. David hears that Nabal has hired the shearers. He's sharpened all the shearing. We didn't have a lot of shearing equipment in Garden Grove growing up, so I'm not exactly sure what that looked like. But whatever it is, he's got a sharp. He's got it ready. The pins have been repaired. The fuzzy sheep are going in here. We'll shear them, and the naked sheep are going to go over here. He's got it all ready to go. David hears that, and David's proper expectation would be, now's the time of celebration. Now's the time where Nabal invites us all back home, and we throw the big party, and I'm sure we are going to be invited. So David hears that it's celebration time. He feels like he should be invited, and it's important as we move on in this story to remember that this is not a mob-style protection scheme. This is a culturally appropriate request for David to make. This would have been the most natural thing in the world for Nabal to go, wow, I have as many sheep as I have because David has been out here protecting the sheep. Absolutely, David. Come on and let's all celebrate the great year that we had together. That kind of a celebration. So look in verse 5. David's going to send a few guys, and I want you to see how politely David has these men ask Nabal, hey, what time do we show up for the party? Verse 5. So David sent 10 young men, not 100, not 400 with shields and spears and swords, 10 guys to be the little hospitality party. And David said to the young men, go up to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. Greet him in my, tell him David sent you. This is no like, Nabal, do you like David? I don't know if David likes you. Do you like him? And we'll see if there's a relationship. No, this is David saying, as the strong warrior who has protected your sheep, here's the request. So the young men go in David's name, and David, and thus you shall greet him. Peace be to you. Peace be to your house. Peace be to all have. I hear that you have shearers. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm. That's a good point. David's got 600 men out there. If he wanted Nabal's sheep, he would have had Nabal's sheep. He could have been a threat, and instead he used his power, his might, to protect Nabal. What a good dude. I hear you have shearers. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm. And they missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever you have at hand to your servants and to your son. Oh, do you see the humility? And to your son, David. David is saying all the right things. And this is a big deal because we're going to talk about what happens when you get insulted. What happens when you are disrespected? Sometimes it's because you are being a little bit of a jerk too. This is not what's happening with David. David is doing everything right. And you know what, Christians? Sometimes you do everything right and there's still insult. Sometimes you do everything right and still there's disrespect. And this is what's happening with David. Yeah, he starts, he says, peace to you, peace to your house, peace to all that you have. Shalom, 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 shalom. May you be well. And I hear it's time for a celebration. Remember, David has earned this reward. David is not saying, hey, y'all got any extra stuff at the potluck? This is something David has earned. He deserves it. He's not asking for charity. He's only asking for what is culturally appropriate. And not only that, but he is asking in the right way. This should be a formality, some sort of a like, we know we have a place at the table. What's the dress code and what time should we show up? So he treats, and even in this, with David's might, with all of his men, if it just take Nabal out, if he wants to just beat up the shepherds, take the sheep, and take all that Nabal has, it wouldn't be that much of a problem for him. And yet, he shows honor and respect to Nabal. Hey, Christians, sometimes not only do you do everything right, but sometimes you are reverent, you show respect, you give honor to others, and you don't get treated good in return. Have you noticed that about the world? It's a pretty earthy story, isn't it? This feels like it happened here on earth. Keep reading. Verses 9 through 11. And when David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal and in the name of David. And then they waited. So apparently they present their like reverse invitation. Hey, what time's the party? And Nabal doesn't. They had to wait. And Nabal answered David's servants at some point. Who is David? Do you guys think Nabal knows who David is? Who has killed his thousands and who has killed his 10,000? Yeah, I think Nabal knows who David is. This is purely to insult him. This is purely Nabal says, thank you for protecting me. Thank you for being an upright guy. Thank you for all you've done for me. Now take a hike. They said to, where was I? And Nabal answered to David's servants, who is David and who is the son of Jesse? The only three people in 1 Samuel who call David the son of Jesse are Saul when he's ticked off and the evil spirit is on him, good old Doeg the Edomite, you remember this clown, and Nabal right here. This is clearly an insult. David has become the great warrior, the one who even Saul at this point has said, clearly, you're going to be king. He has risen in power. He's leading men. And all Nabal says about him is, David, who's the son of Jesse? Just this little shepherd boy from Bethlehem. And he wants to treat David like he's that little nobody from Bethlehem, not like he has earned the respect that he has earned. Hey, Christians, sometimes not only do you do everything right and you're respectful and you're polite, but sometimes in this world, you have really earned status. You have gotten the grades. You have built the business. You have done everything to have the respect of other people. And sometimes Nabal just goes, who's this Grant kid from Garden Grove? Right? Take my bread. Shall I take whose bread and water? Oh, Nabal says, should I take my bread and my water, my meat that I have killed for? What has he done? Nothing. He's just the figurehead. He's just the rich guy at the top. And yet he has this kind of possession over everything to where instead of the blessings of life causing generosity in him, they have caused greed and stinginess in him. Hey, here's one of the big takeaways. Don't be Nabal. Right? We'll get there in the end. But this happens to some of us where the blessings of life, instead of causing us to be generous, cause us to be mine, mine, mine. So, shall I take my bread and my water and meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men who come from where I do not know? He knows full well where David's from. He knows full well who David is. And then he goes on to say, there are men. Oh, sorry, I skipped that part in verse 10. There are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. He says, for all I know, David's a runaway slave. What am I supposed to do? Take care of every band of runaway slaves that's just roaming around the countryside? Nabal was a harsh man who acted badly. You starting to see his character? Again, remember, David isn't asking for charity. He is asking for reciprocating kindness. He has already shown kindness to Nabal. Hey, Christians, sometimes we show kindness to other people, and wouldn't it be great if kindness is always what came back to us? But that didn't happen to David. It's probably not going to happen to me and you either. So the question then is kind of how will David respond, right? Surely David's going to respond with grace. He has been so good lately, right? He didn't kill Saul in the cave, even cutting off the hem of his robe. He felt guilty about it. He went to Saul and said, I'm never going to hurt you. Can't you see how the quality of my life? He's been leading people. He's taking care of people. And you think, surely this little jerk of a dude, Nabal, is not going to be the thing that throws David off of his learning track to trust the Lord. I mean, if you were David's friend, what would you say to David right now? Wouldn't you say, don't worry about this guy? God's provided for us before. He'll provide for us again. But David is too insulted for that. Look at verse 12. So David's young men turned away and came back and told him all this. And David said, you got to love David. David said to his men, every man strap on his sword. And every man of them strapped on his sword. And David also strapped on his sword. And about 4 men went up after David while 200 remained with the baggage. He is going, I do not believe this is about provision. His men are not starving out there. They have figured out an economy. They have not been like fasting for months and months waiting to feed him. They are eating out there in the wilderness. This is about his offended honor. This is about David has been disrespected, and in his culture, this is how he's going to go get his honor back. He's going to have everybody strap on their swords. He's been offended. He's going to go settle the score. Again, Nabal reminds us of Saul. This is a lesson that David has learned before. And David is about to fail where he succeeded. And you think, man, if he would spare Saul, why wouldn't he spare Nabal? And surely it has something to do with this more than just an offense to God as an offense to David. He feels personally attacked. But thank God for Abigail. Verse 18 to 20, Abigail hears what Nabal has done. She knows who Nabal is. Nabal's name either means fool. It's hard to believe his parents named him fool. This might have been just something people called him behind his back. Or it could be that Nabal means fool and is quite, kind of like a takeoff on his name. It's like a pejorative nickname that people called him. But she sees what's happened. She knows who David is. Everybody knows who David is. She knows the danger that Nabal is now in. So she loads up the donkeys, makes an appropriate gift, and takes it out to David to meet him along the way. And verse 21, she meets David on the way. He's got his sword strapped on with all his warriors and the interchange. Now, David had said, surely in vain I have guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness so that nothing was missing of all that belonged to him. And he has returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David and more also if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belongs to him. So with Abigail in front of him, David officially files a complaint. Here's what's happening to your house, and I'll tell you why. I'm not a warlord just after, you know, just to take over your house. No, I have been offended, and this is my right, and I kid you not, every male in your house is going to be dead by morning. I was honorable, and I have been treated with dishonor. Man, Chris, do you have a little of that in you? I was honorable, and I've been treated with dishonor. Strap on your sword. Crank up the emails. Here we go. I'm going to do something about it, David says. One thing I think is important to remember, David is in a little bit of a different culture than we are. This is an honor shame based culture, where our culture is something sociologists call guilt and innocence based culture. So we will argue over and over about what was right and what was wrong, what was legal and what was illegal. But David and his culture is not going to worry so much about what was legal and illegal or even moral and immoral. No, it's going to be about honor for me, honor for my tribe, honor for my family. And if I'm dishonored, settling that score to go win back the good name of my family and my people. And while we are not a shame culture, I think maybe we all would admit we have a little of that in us. We have a little of this understanding. We all know what it means to have our honor offended, what that feels like. And you know, when I'm talking today about concentrating on holiness, our righteousness over our honor, I'm not talking about that we should not care to act in an honorable way. I'm talking about what happens when people treat us in a dishonorable way. In this instance, God has not been offended. David has been offended. What happens when it's me who has been offended? Well, let's look at Abigail's excellent argument. In verse 23, Abigail saw David and she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. And she fell at his feet and said, "On me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant." So Abigail falls on her face, says, "Hey, you can chalk up on my account. Like if this argument does not convince you, you can do to me whatever you are going to do to Nabal." And then here is her argument. Verse 26. Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives and your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt, from saving with your own hand. Now enemies and those who seek you do evil to my Lord, be as Nabal. Man, 25, I skipped. Verse 25 said, hey, David, don't regard this worthless man, Nabal. Her first part of her argument to David is, man, don't regard worthless men. This is something that each of us could really take to heart. When you run into somebody who is harsh and behaves badly, you either say, I will not be satisfied until I have revenge on this dude. Or you say, I'm going to give my emotions, my heart, my behavior, I'm going to give it to this person and I'm going to react to every offense that this person has. You might have some people that you can't just leave in your life that are a permanent fixture in your life who just never treat you right. And you can either be the kind of person that says, oh, I'm going to live my life. I can't be happy until this person either suffers or doesn't treat me well. Abigail's argument is, don't regard fools. Instead of giving your emotional center, your behavior to the Nabals of the world, instead, there are going to be plenty of Nabals in the world. Don't regard them. She says, your integrity, your righteousness is worth more than your honor. And again, I don't mean honor as how you present yourself. I mean honor as in, have you been offended or not? And I want you right now, sitting out here on the wood chips, here on YouTube, to decide if that's true. Abigail's argument is, your righteousness before God, your integrity as a person, is worth more than the insults of worthless people. That it is better for you to consider, how do I act in of my integrity? How do I act in light of my righteousness before God, rather than how do I act in light of the insults that have just been given to me? Then she goes on and says, look, the Lord is restraining you from blood guilt. David, even though you've been offended, the easiest way to say this is, wrongs are not going to make this right, David. Nabal was wrong, but you taking the matter into your own hands, this is not making it right. And then look at the other thing that she says God has saved him from. The Lord has restrained you from blood and from saving with your own hand. Man, do we need to hear that? I wonder if we could say it as simply as this. This might be the thing to write the side of your Bible or on your notes. We do the serving and God does the saving. If you need saving, God will save you. Was God going to leave David alone out there? Was God going to abandon David because Nabal was a dishonorable man? No. No, David, you do the serving. Your integrity matters. You be the man you're supposed to be. And let God be the one who saves you. Man, we need to apply this absolutely everywhere. At work, you do the saving, or you do the serving. Let God do the saving. In your neighborhood, you do the serving. Let God do the saving. There's no need for us to defend our own honor. This is what God does, is saves us. There are Nabals everywhere. And we have to ask, do we want to be the kind of people that respond to every insult from Nabal? Or do we want to be the kind of people who care most about our integrity before God? The third part of Abigail's excellent argument is, God has provided. She's sitting there with all of this provision in verse 27 and says, now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young man. Follow my Lord. Hey, David, I brought food for everybody. It doesn't have to come from Nabal. God will find a way to not only defend you, God will find a way to provide for you. See, David has seen the present that Abigail has brought. The problem is solved. There's a party to be had. The people are all going to have a good time. His people are going to be honored like they should have. But he's still going to go get Nabal because he doesn't just want provision. He wants satisfaction in the insult to himself. God has provided. You know, especially in times of struggle, we have to be the kind of people who are able to recognize where God has provided. We have to be the kind of people who say, the question is not, has my honor been offended? The question is not, have I been insulted? The question is, has God provided for me? Is God good? And if God is good, then certainly I should respond to that. Fourth, Abigail says, forgiveness is the better option. Verse 28, she says, please forgive the trespass of your servant. Of course, Christians have to be people who forgive. Next, Abigail says in verse 28, please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of Yahweh, and evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. If men rise up to pursue you in life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living, in the care of the Lord your God, and the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from you a hollow from a sling. And when the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning, he has appointed you prince over Israel. Abigail says, God has provided, God is providing, and God will provide. Guys, we have to decide if we're going to be the kind of people that react to every insult, react to every time we are dishonored, even react to every time somebody says something bad about Jesus, Jesus can defend himself. Are we going to be the kind of people who react to every insult, every bit of disrespect? Or are we going to be the kind of people who live in the reality that God has provided, God is providing, God will provide, and we're okay? David is about to go off and not win a victory for God, but win a victory for himself. Man, lastly, in this excellent argument from Abigail, in verse 31, she says, my Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having the shed blood without cause, or for my Lord working salvation himself. She says, not only is there eternal consequence, not only is it spiritually proper, David, for you to just forgive and move on, but there is real world benefit too. You are going to react out of anger. You're going to react out of your own wounded pride, and you're going to feel guilty about this in years to come. David, there is real world benefit to just letting this go. Man, the situation is clear. Nabal is a jerk and does jerky things. David's not going to change that. Also, the men are tired and deserve a party. And David has done a great job. These are all true. But there's other things that are true too. Like, Nabal isn't David's provider, but God is. In order to bring Nabal to what David feels like is justice, David would have to bring guilt upon himself. He is going to have to choose between his own holiness. He's going to have to choose between reflecting the mercy and holiness of God or defending his own honor. And I bet you and I have a decision most days. Are we going to act in a way where we feel like we have to defend our honor, make right every time we're disrespected, or reflect the holiness of God to the world? To David's credit, he listens to Abigail, which I think is very important in this story, because Samuel's gone. And one of the questions we want to know as if we're the people of Israel reading our own stories, we go, did God's provision of his word die with Samuel? No, God is putting words in Abigail's mouth and preaching them to David. And to David's great credit, he's receiving. David says to Abigail, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel. He's saying, Abigail, I'm not just listening to you. I'm listening because God has sent you to meet me today. Blessed be your discretion, and blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and working salvation with my own hands. Well, we are out of time. Let me just give you four things in 4 minutes to take away, and then we'll share communion together and we'll sing a song. First of all, this is pretty obvious, But let's say it again. Let's be sure we're not Nabal. Let's be sure that we are people who are, instead of greedy and stingy, that we are generous and show hospitality. For a Christian person, we never go wrong with generosity. We never go wrong with giving good wages. We never go wrong for caring for those who helped us. Let's go out of our way to not offend in the same way Nabal did. And big number two is probably, look, you're going to deal with Nabal over and over in your life. There's not going to be a lack of insult, a lack of insult against your honor. Nabal is everywhere. And we can't be those who follow Jesus and then fight our own battles for our pride. Is that how Jesus lived? Did Jesus fight every one of those battles? No, rather, he stood before his accuser silent. There's going to be rumors and insults coming in. We can't respond with rumors and insults. We respond with grace. We respond with mercy. We respond with kindness. There's going to be dismissed where you don't get the credit you really deserve. You really did a good job. You worked hard. You did all the right stuff. And yet, instead of honored, you'll be dismissed. That's going to be a part of life. And we can either respond in kind or we can respond with love. We're going to be ripped off in lots of ways. This is the way of the world. And we're going to be either be people who say eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, or we're going to be people who respond with forgiveness. Now, what kind of people are we? Whenever you have a chance, choose holiness over defending your own honor. Choose righteousness over saving yourself and leave saving yourself to God. Big idea number three to take away is, man, listen to Abigail. Not only listen to Abigail's argument, that's number four, but God is going to bring people into your life. There are counselors aplenty. Instead of being the people who say, oh, is that right? Strap on your sword, we're going. Maybe we could be the kind of people who have ears to hear, to David's credit, as he does, that when people speak into our lives, we're willing to listen. And then lastly, listen to Abigail's argument. Look, there is somebody right now that deserves your wrath. I can just about guarantee it. There is somebody that if it was all about you and your honor and your pride, you should really go give it to him. You have been dismissed. You have been insulted. And you have every right in this world to strap on your sword, grab your boys, and head to Nabal's house. You can defend your honor. You can reflect God's forgiveness. But you really can't do both. You can either forgive and extend mercy like God has to you, or you can be the one who will not be satisfied unless everybody gives you the glory you deserve. Man, would you listen to Abigail's argument? Your integrity matters. Just don't regard the Nabals of this world. And God is providing for you, and God has provided for you, and God will provide for you. Instead of living in light of the insult, live in light of God's great provision for you.